Welcome to this How to Handle a Board Meeting of Eurofar 2012. My name is Søren, and I'm an alcoholic from Denmark. Can we start the meeting with a short period of silence, please? Thank you. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strengths, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. About anonymity. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. Thus, we respectfully ask that AA speakers and AA members not be photographed, videotaped, or identified by full name on audio tapes or and in published or broadcast support reports of our meetings, including those reports on new media technologies such as the Internet. The assurance of anonymity is essential in our efforts to help other problem drinkers who may wish to share our recovery program with us. Our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. This meeting is recorded. When sharing, please only identify with your first name and the city you are from. This is a panel presentation. We will begin with a speaker sharing on the topic for about 40 minutes, followed by an open sharing. While the meeting are open for anyone to attend, participation is limited to those who have desire to stop drinking. Please welcome our speaker, Arni from Iceland.
Arni alcoholic.
Arni.
Fine, thank you.
Okay. The reason I sit here today is because I know a few people in the IPA thing in Scandinavia, and they were asking for people to speak, and I was helping them finding speakers, and one day they asked me to speak. When I was asked to speak, I was asked to speak on the topic of working with others, and I one deceased AA member was asked, "How do you prepare for these things?" He did a lot of weekends and whole weekends, speaking whole weekends, and he's answered that by, "Well, you start first drink whiskey for 20 years. That's a good start." What I'm about to say is when I got here, the topic had been changed to how to handle a wet, and that sentence is missing a noun, so my first thought was how to handle a wet bed and wet ears and wet water, whatever. Because I'm in AA because I and I'm still an AA member because I'm a bedwetter, I'm a puker, I'm a bum, I'm a man that sacrificed his life for to put my life on pause for the next weekend. And that paused my dreams, that paused my hopes, that paused my everything. And I get into AA, and I don't know what the fuck is wrong with you people. I had seen the staffs on the wall a few years before, and I just knew that AA was bullshit. And I had nothing to. I woke up November 13th of 2000. It was one of those days. I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't stay in bed. I couldn't stand. I couldn't sit. I could smoke a cigarette, but I couldn't get anything out of it. I was sinking. And on Wednesday, I go to meet a friend for a job, and she asks me, "Are you an alcoholic?" And here I am. She sends me to an open AA meeting, and there was this blonde, middle-aged lady there speaking about being arrested and doing prison time and doing cocaine and going, fleeing the country, going to America, and I had no clue. I had no clue. I had no clue what AA was about. I had no clue about anything, but I thought I knew. After 5 months of waiting for nothing to happen, I gave up and I walked into this, just bumped into this guy at a meeting that I didn't attend. I just went there after the meeting. I was desperation. I know what desperation is. It's a state of mind. It's everything was telling me, go work the steps. Everything. The graffiti, throw away chewing gum, everything. And I walked into this meeting, and this guy who had asked me how I was doing or something on a previous meeting, I asked him how to help me, just to show me what this step bullshit looks like, to give you a pretty direct translation. And we started reading the book. And I didn't know what we were doing, really. We were reading this book, and this Bill guy, and there's alcoholism, and there's a physical allergy, and there's a mental obsession, and there's this... I don't really know. And in one session, I had written this critique for a magazine called Sound about the Bell and Sebastian album called Tiger Milk, and the critique I wrote with my brother-in-law, and it was basically homosexual crisis of some sort music, and I saw that CD in my sponsor's living room when he was making tea, and we read something from the Big Book, and then he said, "Now it's time to slaughter the hen," and he went down on his knees, and we did the third step prayer, and a few weeks later we are reading from the Big Book, and I would like to read that for you, and it goes something like. It went something like this. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. And then he said, stop. What was that? Read that again. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. Stop, he said. What do you think that means? Mm-hmm. Because I didn't know how. I knew that there were guys in AA that raised their hand. They raised their hand at the end of the meeting, and I thought, who the fuck do they think they are? And my thought when I came to AA was, people were asking me if I had a sponsor, I'd bought the Big Book, how I was doing, you know, really tough questions, and who do they think they are? And I remember thinking one of two things in meetings, or something that was a mix of. That guy is gay. Back then, I thought that was a really bad thing, and that guy is full of shit. That guy is faking spiritual experience. That guy is blah 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 blah. I was judging people, and I thought because I'm so judgmental. I'm such an asshole. Like, really, I'm such an asshole. I know how everything should be, how everybody should be, how everyone should think, how everything. And I you know, he had me read this, and he said, after we read Working with Others, he my sponsor said, now it's your time, and I didn't know how. And it wasn't humility, you know. Don't do the false humility, kids. And especially with wet drunks. I went out and I started raising my hand really at meetings. People asking for sponsors, and it's not that tough. Okay, let me see. Can you raise your hand? It doesn't really, you know, it's easy. it's most people can do it. I know one AA member that doesn't have any hands, and he still sponsors, you know. You don't really have to raise your hand to sponsor people. And nobody was taking, you know, this doesn't do anything, really. This isn't Herbalife. This isn't multi-level marketing. It's not a chain system where everybody is waiting to get into your level in the line or some bullshit like that. I didn't go to that guy because, you know, he had, you know, he just showed me some attention at a meeting. And that's the truth. That's the only reason I asked him. I wasn't able to make a judgment call about his level, quality of sobriety or what. I got lucky. I can tell you that. That guy has you know, after 17 months sober, I was, you know, really dishonest relationship, and I called him crying. Just crying, and you know, knowing that I was going to a bar in Reykjavik, I just knew, and I was not crying because of the girl and the relationship. Not only, I was also crying because I was going to that bar and I couldn't stop it. And I called him, and he directed me another way to the west of Reykjavik, and I was lucky with a sponsor. But he's of the opinion that and this is not. My opinion is really complex, and the most dangerous thing in AA, he says, was that we have something other to work with than the big book. That when we are working with newcomers or we are doing AA, that we have some other sponsor manual than the big book. There is a lot of other helpful stuff. Physiotherapy has saved my back. You know, I've been assaulted 3 times by AA members. You know, getting so stiff in my neck, I couldn't turn my head right as I'm doing now. See, but I still have pain. There's a lot of good stuff out there. But I'm raised in AA believing that we use the book. And there's good stuff in the book. What are we supposed to do? And if I read here from... It's in the second chapter. It's really... Early in the book, it says, highly competent psychiatrists who have dealt with us have found it sometimes impossible to persuade an alcoholic to discuss his situation without reserve. Strangely enough, wives, parents, and intimate friends usually find us even more unapproachable than do the psychiatrist and the doctor. And then we have italicized, which means important in the big book, just for your reference. But the ex-problem drinker who has found this solution, who is properly armed with the facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. That's my job description. That is my job description. You know, to give you one opinion, I believe that the most important thing we have And the most important, if there is a requirement for working with others, I think we have three requirements. We need time. If we don't have time, it doesn't matter how great our story is, how great our recovery is, we are not able to be of help. Time is the most important thing. And these guys will call you in the middle of the night, and they will call you crying, they will call you drunk, they will call you about to drink, they will SMS you about things, and you will have, I've gotten SMSs about, when you read this SMS, I will have begun drinking my first beer, and you know, shit like that. They are drama creatures. God damn, they are dramatic.
Just like the rest of us.
Yeah, just like the rest of us, absolutely. The second most important thing is to have fucked up your life. I qualify. Because I believe strongly in not being like Moses of the Bible, walking down the mountain with the stone tablets and telling the people how to live. I believe strongly that this is not the way AA is supposed to be done. We are not here to tell people how to live. We are showing them a way to live. And I am not doing this because I am better than, the only reason that I am at AA meetings is that I believe I lost the power of choice and drink. And it has never come back. I have, I can go into philosophy for a long time about choice and not no choice and real choice and whatever, but I think I need to be an AA member to have sobriety. And the third most important thing is to have done something about it. If you have done something about it, you have something to share. If you have written inventory, you can tell an alcoholic how to write inventory, even if you're doing it wrong. A wrong, badly written inventory is better than no inventory at all, just like having time is better than not having time. My first 12-step call was we were at the Alano Club, and my stepbrother and I, we are dragged into, we are asked if we can go on a 12-step call. And we're seeing a lady, she's been shooting speed for 25 years at that time. To the best of my knowledge, she is still alive and she's still shooting speed. And it's just next door to the club, literally. It's just across the street. And I didn't really realize what I was doing there. I was just being an AA member going on a 12-step call, didn't know what I was doing. I fell asleep on the sofa, and the sofa was full of needles and shit, and it wasn't pretty. But I started raising my hand at meetings, and nobody would come up to me, because I looked like a serial killer, basically. I wasn't, I didn't look sober. I had no money. I had no, sense of how to dress. I still thought that going to get a tan was something that other people did, and I was, I was still a bit crazy. And I went to my sponsor, and he said, "Why are you asking them? Why are you waiting for them? They're sick. Just walk up to the next guy and tell him, I'm your sponsor." And I did. And yeah. And that worked with some, and it didn't with others. Some guys got really paranoid. and who can blame them, really? I got a sponsee, and I showed him how to read inventory, write inventory. I didn't know how to write inventory myself. I just did something, and he did. And in his fifth step, I fell asleep, and and woke up and we, I just did something. But it's the that lady that was shooting up on speed. I had a few ideas about alcoholism, and that lady helped me. At a point in time, some maybe 2 years over, maybe 3 years, I don't know. I'm in a meeting, and I had this thing that I in the beginning I didn't know if I was an alcoholic because I never really wanted to stop, really. I just didn't remember. I'm standing at the podium and I'm saying, who really wanted to stop? Who really wanted to stop but still picked up? She raised her hand. There's a description in the chapter to the wives that about the first husband and the second husband and the third husband and the fourth husband and levels of alcoholism. And, you know, I'm score a full house for one husband, one and two, a lot of the three, and, you know, thinking about that stuff, you know, because I've never had anything to lose, really. You know, I was just a punk. I was a useless piece of shit, really. I never had any friends to betray or nothing, really, you know, not as much as a lot of other people, but I flipped that around. What do I need to do to stay sober? And I find that in the description of each individual husband, and husband number one is not an alcoholic, by the way, that I need to work do AA as seriously as someone who has really, you know, to give you an example of a friend of mine who has betrayed his friend, lied to his friend had stolen the money and proven the point by using the key that his friend gave him to his apartment and sneaking into his apartment in the middle of the night and shooting his niece off with a shotgun. Yeah. I've never done that. I'm sorry, I'm not an alcoholic. No. I've never done that. But I know that, you know, I know that if overeater, he needs to go to OA and he will find the solution in OA. I know that an Al-Anon member can find a solution in Al-Anon. But A is not really the solution for me as kind of a special. No, it's. I found that this lady and a bunch of there was a guy that was with at meetings with me. His name was Krimi. He was staying at the halfway house just down the street from the club, and he was at the meetings, and I met him outside a shop. And we stopped, and I had nothing to tell him. He was sober, clean sober. 2 days later, he overdosed and died at the halfway house. And not knowing, this whole thing of waiting for the newcomer to sober up and come to AA, where he is in a position where you have something to tell him, something to say. If you know. I have to be effective. I can't control how effective I am, but I have to. You know, when I'm another story. I'm listening to inventory. This guy is sitting in my living room, and he's reading his inventory, and he's going through all the things, and it's mostly women. He's been sober for a while. It's mostly women. And this lady and this lady and this lady, and he made it was some kind of a fuck crusade or something, and that he was on sober, and I'm sitting in the living room, and I know that I know exactly what I'm supposed to say, but I can't say it because I'm not current on my amends, because up the street it takes literally 3 minutes to walk. It's a house where there lived a lady. I had, you know, yeah, no, no, we were not together, but we met at a bar kind of a thing, and bullshit it. And I hadn't made the approach. I couldn't say anything. Making amends is extremely important to not feeling like a guest in AA. It's extremely important in being effective, because you know that guy that you're sponsoring, he needs to go the whole way. He needs to make every amend, and you can't really tell him, because you know that you would be a lying son of a bitch if you did, because you're not current on your amends. And at that time, I just knew that I had to do that. He said, I didn't know what to say, you know. And I said, okay, let's go. And we went. We went outside. We walked up the street, and I tried my best to find that lady. I didn't find her. She moved. She didn't live there anymore. We went back to my living room, and we finished the fifth step. And it's the same way with. You know, if you're not sure about what alcoholism is, you can't really, you know, that lady shooting up on speed, you don't understand if you don't know what if alcoholism is something, if the 12 step is something that you want to have neat and fixed and packed into to a package with ribbons and you want something that is really clean and nice, then you know, you don't understand alcoholism. That's my opinion. Sorry. I'm an opinionated asshole. Being an asshole is a human right, and if I don't use my human rights, they will take it away. I found that I, you know, that guy, Krimi, he died. I think that if I had, you know, been more current on my amends, I could have talked to him. I might have saved him. You know, and that's the stages of sorrow thing. Really, really well documented in psychology. You know, my aunt, she killed herself. 2 weeks before that, she asked me to scan these pictures. I didn't. I automatically thought that if I had scanned the pictures, she might not have killed herself. You know, you have these people, and they become a part of you. They're in your meeting. They are around you. And I have to know how I can be effective. And making amends and being willing to do what it takes, really. It breaks my heart, because thinking about what I was going to say today, most of these guys are dead. They're just dead. And some of them aren't. When I talk to these guys, I this one guy who he comes into AA. He's sober, goes to rehab, comes into AA. He doesn't know what to, you know, what AA is about, and he's really confused. And he's going out to sea to make a lot of money. You know, he's getting a million and a half, two and a half million per month, Icelandic. That's a lot of money. and he comes back to shore and he drinks again and again and again, or starts gambling and a bunch of other things. I don't know what to tell that guy, until one day I'm moved to tell him. I have my story. My story is, you know, I drank in Iceland, I moved to Denmark, blah blah blah. Then I have something that I call an Icelandic sparisaga, a special story. I believe then that there is another level called special stories that you don't say in mixed company. It makes people freak out. They go, "What the fuck?" And it doesn't involve other people usually. It's just me doing something really fucked up. And I told him one of those stories, and he understood. I told him he was crazy, drunk, kind of coming down from something at a meeting, and I tell him a story, and a story that I will absolutely not share on tape. And he understood that I wasn't coming down the mountain with the stone tablets and telling him how to live his life, and you should meditate, and you should write inventory, and you should make coffee, blah, 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 blah. I'm telling him my story, like it really is, that I am really sick, or I was. I'm coming from that same place. And it turned on a light. The first thing we did in staff work was going to his house that he bought with no flooring. He had bought the flooring and he hadn't put anything down. It was all a mess. And we did his floors, and it took a day, and my knees were so shot after that. And he made his amends. This crazy lunatic guy who didn't know how to handle sobriety for more than a few weeks at a time, he did something because I shared something with him. I shared something with him. Another guy, one of the homeless guys in Iceland, I was tagging him along, and he was tagging along, and I did something that I do with the guys. I take him down to the lake in Reykjavik, and I show him the world from a different angle. He died. But I heard later that was the only meditation that he had ever done. And he was never sober enough. You know, he was never sober in meetings. He was never anything. But somebody, and I was there to show him the world, to show him meditation from a really easy angle. And some of these guys, you find the drunk guy and you drag him home because you have time, you're single, you don't have any kids, you're chronically fucking single, but and he detoxes, and detoxing from alcohol is dangerous stuff. And he's flapping on the floor and like a fish and cramps and shit, and you don't know what the fuck to do, and so you call the ambulance, and the ambulance comes, and he says, "Oh, it's you. Oh, we can't do anything for him," and they leave, and the cramps finish, and I talk to the doctor for I think an hour and a half about how fucked up the system was, that somebody's getting a cramp and he's dying on your floor or something. It could be dying, you know. And that guy, you know, he never got sober. But that's not the point. The point is not that I got a sponsor. Somebody got a sponsee. You know, you will not find in this book anything about get a sponsor. You will find a lot of stuff about get somebody to work with. I will not sponsor anyone today. I will not offer to be anybody's sponsor unless they ask me. But I will offer to work with them. I will offer to go through the book. I hate that label. I'm nothing special. I'm an opinionating asshole. I'm so opinionated that people leave when I talk. You know, I'm not trying to be perfect. I've tried perfect too. Meditating 45 minutes a morning and meditating 45 minutes a night and being so, you know, getting so crazy in that stuff that, I dropped it. I dropped it. It's not about being perfect even. It's, you know, like we used to say, you know, before I got sober, nobody's perfect. It's it's about making an effort, because my sobriety is contingent on working with others. The paperwork, steps 1 through 9 and whatever, it's just a formality. It's just a formality. It's not something, it's not an end to itself. Making your amends is a luxury. It's a goddamn luxury to make you more effective to work with others, which is, you know, if you spread out step 1 through 9 through your whole life, Think about it. I know some people are doing that, probably in this room too. You know, using step 9 as a pest dispenser. You know, you do one amends and just to feel great, and so you keep a stack of amends. How about life after everything, with nothing on your back? Nothing on your back. And going to someone who is just as fucked up as you are, or even more, and telling them, it's a luxury. There's nothing hidden. One other guy, he called me from the psych ward. He probably called a bunch of other guys that didn't answer the phone. I answered the phone. He's in the psych ward. I had gone to his house a few days before, and where he was watching TV on mute, doing ketamine and smoking cigarettes. And he's just staring at the wall, and when I said something, he just looked at me. He calls me a few days later from the hospital, and he's off the ketamine, and you know, his girlfriend threw him out, and he stayed on my sofa. And for the next few weeks, he slept in my little disgusting room where I lived. And he did his amends. He did his 8-step list, and I'm driving him around the city because they took away his driver's license, and he's making his amends. And I'm on one of his amends. I'm sitting in the car next to a house I set on fire. Working with others will get you through the program, and then you have the bright boy of wonder, somebody that comes in and he gets it, and he races through his amends, and he's getting ahead of you, and then pride will come in and tell you, hey, he's going further than you have. You know, it all works together. I think that working with others and as you know, one guy, it helps you helps you make your amends. And working with, and doing your amends shows you how you can be more effective working with others. I think it's there are two spokes on a wheel. One guy, he's dead too. His name was Danny Dyla. He was shooting up on Dramamine. It's not a pretty sight. And we kind of trick him to come home, and he's there, and he doesn't, you know, it's not a pretty sight. You know, it's fucking disgusting. You know, Dramamine is not made for injection at all. And he has these big brown marks all over his body, and we're just counting the seconds until he has to be amputated. And the day after he comes there, holding a Subway outside our door, and he's crying. He's just crying, and we take him in. The Subway goes all over the place, and he's just sitting there and crying. And then when he stops crying, he starts to talk to people that are not in the room. And you don't know what to do about that. You don't know. I've learned not to play doctor. It's not good for me to play doctor. I have an opinion about a lot of things, about drugs given to people and kids and shit. I try to keep that out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, sitting, you know, meeting a guy outside the psych ward, and he's, you know, he was in AA 10 years ago, but he was told that he wasn't sober because he was doing drugs, doing doctor prescribed drugs, Prozac or whatever. And who the fuck do we think we are to throw these people out? You know, if he has an honest desire to stop drinking, why not? What the hell? You know, it makes me angry because, and it makes me sad too, because I was just as judgmental about that as those people were 10 years ago. This is one guy that, probably my time is up, and I'm out in the country where he lived, and I'm there's a conference, and I'm speaking, and I go on a long walk through town with him, and we're talking, and he's asking questions, and what about this, and how does this work, and he He comes to Reykjavik and he starts doing his amends and he drinks again and comes back in and working on his amends and he did a lot of the amends, a lot of the school stuff, a lot of the money stuff, a lot of the stuff, but he never did his family. One night he calls me in the middle of the night, 5 o'clock or something. He's sitting outside a house. His wife and kids at home. He's drinking, and he's thinking about going back to that guy again who will fuck him in the ass just to feel something. Some gay dude that really likes, you know, him. And this friend of mine, he's not gay, but he would do that. And you know, going to see him the day after, and he's you know. And watching someone like that finish his amends and difficult family amends and start to grow. He started to understand things that he could never understand before. He thought it was really dumb. He wasn't. He was just, you know, he just had a story that was just in the way of you know, intelligence, really. those guys, they're heartwarming. It's good to know that he's doing great. He's doing great. He's a husband and a father, and he's doing great. Another guy, we used to take turns to drive him to rehab. He was 50s odd something, and he was living with his mom, who never stayed at home because he was drinking there all the time. And this, my specialty was getting him in the car to go to rehab without having a beer in the car. The other guys just bought beers to get him into the car, and we're driving to the rehab from one of the suburbs, and he's there, and he's telling me that he'll never get sober. He'll never get sober. He's done something really, really horrible. Something so horrible that he can never get sober. And we're just 100 meters from the rehab when I finally get him to tell me what he has done. And he looks at me drunk out of his mind, and he says, "I killed a man." What he had done, I learned later, was that he had taken his uncle, who had abused him sexually, taking him out to the lava fields outside of Reykjavik and just executed him. And I drive him in, I without missing a beat, I tell him the most horrible thing I've ever done. Again, something that you don't share on tape. And he looked at me and he said, "How could you do it?" Before I left Iceland to move to Oslo, where I live now, I went to a bunch of meetings that I usually don't go to. I met him there. He's sober. And I had some role in that. I didn't sponsor him, I didn't fix him, I didn't do anything, but I played a role. And I think that is what A is about. It takes a village to raise a child. It's okay to talk to somebody who is new, even though you're not his sponsor. You know, talk to him. Tell him their story. And in private conversation, tell him everything. Trust them. If you want them to trust you, trust them. Tell them where you're coming from. Tell them what this is about. Tell them about stories of the guys that died. Tell them about your victories, your losses, your everything. I think that is, yeah, that's what I have.
3 minutes.
Oh, I'm good. Okay, well done.
The meeting is now open for questions and answers or comments. We ask that you limit your share to 3 minutes.
Brian Alcoholic from Boise, Idaho.
Hi, Brian.
Just as you were speaking, I know I've been around many places in the States, and some there's quite an availability for detox, rehab, dropping people off at the hospital, and so when you have a wet one that is willing, that needs help getting sober. And actually, where I live now, though, there's like one place that you can bring them, and the hospitals don't like it when you just come into an emergency room and drop them off, and they get stuck with the bill. So how available is like rehab and detox here and maybe in Reykjavik as well?
Rehab is free, or detox is free. So, alcoholics need all the help they can get from anyone, really, from family members, from doctors, from psychiatrists, whatever. You know, I, of course, we have an opinion what they need to do, but what the hell, you know. In Iceland, if you go into your first rehab, you will get in there in a matter of hours or days. If you're going for the fifth time this year, you might have to wait a few days. Yeah, you might have to wait a couple of weeks. If you're going for the 100th time in your life, you might have a seat or have a bed just for you. You know, it's all different. There are different places that do different things. Like the psych ward hospital there was a trick to get people in there. Just tell them, go in there and tell them that you're going to kill yourself. some of us are labeled as crazy, and then we have to go to this facility, and some of us are some, you know, there are a lot of places that will help. In Iceland, at least. But sometimes getting sober is not that hard. Let's talk about that after the meeting. But that's, it's not that hard. Not picking up again, that's a trick, you know. And they have a certain willingness. Work with that willingness that they have. If they're only willing to do service, and they tell you, no, I'm not working the steps, but I'll do service. Just pour service on them. If they don't have hands, they don't do the cops. But, you know, it's, you know, they can do anything. That guy with no hands, he was a greeter. You know, he has a car today. He's driving his car. You know, doing fine. You know, everybody can do anything, everything. Yeah.
Hello, my name is Bas. I'm an alcoholic from Copenhagen. I would like to know, I'm working with a guy, working, stop working. With a guy who is really, he's not capable of getting getting sober at all. I mean, I've been knowing him for a year by now, and he's still continuously lying about if he has been drinking or not has been drinking. And I I really don't want to give him up because he just asked me for his help. He asked me for help all the time. But then, like many people said, just drop him. I mean, he'll never or fire him because. He doesn't want to get sober. He doesn't want to get honest. But, you know, it's like, you know, he really needs help, and I'm trying to push him a little bit in the direction of just go to rehab because you really, really need it. I mean, he's totally fucked up. So I just want to know what your opinion about that, because, I mean, I'm actually out of solutions, or if I should have some solutions, or just, you know, pick up the phone when he's calling. But, you know, it's like always the whining story, and he starts up again, and he wants to meet, and he wants to read, and then all of a sudden it's, you know, 11 o'clock in the morning, he starts calling and is drunk again. So it's like, what do you do? I mean, I really cannot. I try, you know, escorting him to maybe to a rehab or in the city or something, but nothing. But he still asked me for help. So, and if he asked me for help, I need to say yes. So, what's your opinion?
There is room for experimentation. Let me put it this way. For some guys, the only thing that you can do for them is be kind to them. For some guys, the only thing that you can do for them is to be tough to them. I have started with a bunch of newcomers that, you know, we just didn't click, and they clicked with someone else. And this is a group effort, and getting other guys on board. What they did in the beginning was Dr. Bob would sponsor a newcomer, and the newcomer would be in Dr. Bob's hospital, and he would wake up in the hospital, whatever, and Dr. Bob would send other AA members to him, and they could not tell him how they got sober at all. That was the only rule. They could not tell him. They couldn't tell him about getting dry, having a spiritual experience, nothing. They could just talk about drinking and drinking and drinking and drinking and drinking. And some guys will identify with me. Some guys just won't identify with me. Absolutely not. I'm a bit cerebral, kind of an Asperger case. I overthink things. I will find good, you know, variations and blah, 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 something that makes sense to me. It makes no sense to other people. And then I listen to their explanation for the same thing, and it doesn't make any sense to me. You know, identification is key. It's absolutely key. We are there to build their trust. And not, you know, I didn't trust my sponsor one bit. I sat there in my fifth step and read everything from the resentment inventory except one thing, and everything from fear except one thing, and everything from sex except one thing, all the same thing. And you know, I had to take the leap of faith. And they have to take the leap of faith too. And they have to, that's something that they have to do. You can't do that for them. But we can fit ourselves to be of maximum service. I believe strongly in going into gory details. You have to, you know, I weigh them. I take a look at their, you know, I look into their eyes, and I'm not perfect at judging people's character, but I'm getting better every day. And it's, you know, working with him is a lot about me, you know, and this has backfired. That guy that slept on my, you know, I was driving around Reykjavik, he put out a really horrible story about me that was a total lie. That is, you know, still going around AA in Iceland. You know, it's not pretty at all. Not always. But when they do, it's beautiful. When they get it, it's beautiful. It's so totally worth it. And it's not that I fix them, and it's not that I am a part of something. I'm a part of God or whatever coming into their lives, and that change. It doesn't only happen through me. You know, allow him to go to someone else if that will be more effective. Allow him to, you know, take up meditation or yoga or whatever. You know, I've seen scores of guys pick up on this Sri Shimnoi thing and doing meditation, and that works great. They're sober for years and years and years, and then they come back to AA sometimes, and sometimes they don't, and sometimes whatever. We're not here to collect members. Sorry.
Yeah, my name is Haldur. I'm from Iceland. I was wondering, where do you, like Bas was asking about, where do you cut your losses between, for example, codependency, and trying to help somebody and them taking advantage of you? And it's said, well, in order to get sober, you really need to hit rock bottom. Where do you stop? Do you help them dig until they hit rock bottom, or do you cut your losses and wait until they do it by themselves?
If I can afford it, I will help them. I had two guys that were thrown out of the sober house, and they could come in back again in 36 hours after, you know, getting sober. They had to be sober 36 hours to come back in, and two of them came in on Friday. We did our food shopping. We were living together, four guys in an AA commune, and we bought groceries for the whole week on Friday, and it was all gone on Saturday night. They ate like pigs. Those two skinny newcomers, and some of that stuff is, you know, and I have to be honest with them, you know, and I can't be honest with them if I'm not honest with myself and my own recovery and my own amends and my own job as an AA member, you know. If I know, you know, having done my amends, I can help when I can spot when they are honest and when they're not. So just be upfront with them and tell them, yeah, you're full of shit, man. Or you're gonna drink again. And I've been, you know, pretty famous for that in Iceland. You know, you're not done. You're not done. You have to drink again. And you know, whatever. You know, alcoholism kills them, not us. We might kill them with misinformation, but it's their own. They have to take the leap of faith. They have to be willing to step on the invisible bridge, to quote Indiana Jones.
I'm sure I'm an alcoholic from Copenhagen. So one last question or comment, please.
My name is Anders, I'm an alcoholic. Yes. About 10 or 11 years ago, I went on my first house call for a wet drunk. We were two guys going to a guy, picking me up. His house was full of bottles, you know how it is, you know, it was disgusting and so on. We drove him down to the hospital on the way. He wanted to stop, get some booze. We waited 4 hours in the immersion room before they took him in. They don't like drunks in Denmark. We got him in there. He got sober for a couple of days. We took him out, took him to meetings. He went out drinking. I gave up. The other guy who made the 12-step call, he continued to phone this guy. And this guy is sitting in the next room talking about spirituality, having almost 10 years now. Never give up. Never give up. That was my lesson that day. And in this room, this is also a recomer from hell coming to our meeting time after time and time. At the end, I didn't even want to say hi anymore because it was, you know, but still, never give up, never give in. Sometimes they'll get it. It'll take years for somebody. That's just my message. Thank you.
That is all the time we have. Thank you, everyone, for being part of this meeting. Now I will read the 9-step promises from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of usefulness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. And some messages. The next meeting in this room will be in nothing, but in room 1. In Marty will be step 12-ton meeting, and in room 2, Henke will be the living the traditions meeting. In room 3, the Lewis room will be the Al-Anon meeting, prayer and meditation, 11th step. You can also find meeting schedule on the screens at the entrance of the different rooms. Furthermore, I hope to see you all in the main meeting this afternoon, where next year's Europa 2013 host will be elected. And I hope you will enjoy us at the dinner and party tonight. If you have any questions, please talk to anyone at the Europa 2012 registration or information table. Please now join me in the serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.